leaders play such a key role in what the lived, real experience of culture is. I find that in organizations, culture can be in the remit of HR, understandably, because they are informed and know how to go about this. And somebody in the organization has to own it specifically to make sure it happens. But what concerns me is when there is no real ownership of the cultural and behavioral change that needs to happen across the layers of leadership, because that's where the real transformation happens. So to me, it needs to be a partnership.
Welcome to the Leading Transformational Change podcast. Our passion is to help you lead and develop organizations with a remarkably healthy culture that can positively impact all of its stakeholders. Every other Thursday, we drop hour-long conversations with world-leading researchers and experts on culture, ethics, change, and leadership. My name is Tobias Sturesson, and I'm your host and the co-founder of Art Management. Why do executive teams so often fall into the trap of delegating the responsibility for culture to just one function, often HR and sometimes ethics and compliance? What are the real issues with that approach? And what can HR and ethics and compliance leaders and other executives do to ensure broader collaboration on culture? I read a fascinating article in Harvard Business Review recently on this topic, and I immediately decided to ask the author, Rebecca Newton, to come and share her perspective with you all. Rebecca is an organizational psychologist with a PhD in psychology, a frequent Harvard Business Review contributor, senior visiting fellow at the London School of Economics, and the CEO of Coach Advisor, a London-based culture agency. She is also the author of Authentic Gravitas, Who Stands Out and Why, based on her extensive experience coaching executives at companies like Google, Coca-Cola, and Accenture. I thoroughly enjoyed my conversation with Rebecca, as we both have committed much of our professional lives to strengthening cultural health and values-based leadership. We discussed how HR and ethics and compliance can secure buy-in, how to preserve the best aspects of organizational culture while changing what needs to change, how to deal with the pain of change, why gravitas matters, and how to develop it. Unfortunately, we experienced some technical issues due to a bad internet connection, but our producer Fina has worked her magic to create the best possible episode. But before we begin, yesterday I was in a conversation with an executive team that recognize the need for culture change to deliver on their mission more effectively. And we discussed how easy it is to fall into the trap of devising a new policy whenever problematic behavior arises, or believing that just declaring a new set of values will alter behavioral pattern. While clarifying values, codes of conduct, and policies has its place, true change requires our leaders and team members to develop their professional judgment, reflect regularly on the impact of their behaviors and decisions, speak up about dilemmas, and cultivate other critical habits to sustain cultural health. That's why we designed the Culture and Leadership Program, a 12-month high-impact organizational-specific culture change and leadership development initiative. Over the course of a year, your leaders and team members will develop the habits and skills necessary to build a thriving workplace, deliver on your mission, and have a responsible impact. You can read more and download free materials at cultureandleadership.org, cultureandleadership.org. But now, without further ado, let's jump into my conversation with Rebecca Newton. Rebecca, it is such a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Tobias. Great to be with you.
Great to be with you. And I found out about your work through an article that you wrote in Harvard Business Review, where you talked about the way that organizations frequently delegate the responsibility for culture to HR. And in my experience, I've definitely seen the same thing so many times, but also in some cases, it's to ethics and compliance, but kind of to these two functions, depending on what part of culture it is. And you write about the problem with that. What do you see as the primary issue with this strategy?
Ultimately, that things don't really change. If we're talking about culture change, and it's probably worth unpacking that first. So by, you know, when we're talking about organizational culture, I'm meaning the assumptions, the values, the behaviors, the artifacts and policies and processes that support that, you know, the kind of way that we are, who we are collectively. We talk about culture change. Really, what I see with clients is that they want a huge culture shift, but they need movement in some parts of the culture. Or, as per one of my recent HBR articles, they want to keep the culture that they want. That's actually the change initiative, is to make sure they hold on to the culture they want through times of growth. So when they're thinking about culture change, the reality is that probably the biggest driving force of the culture that you have and that you create and that you retain, it never stays stagnant, is leadership and the culture and the environment that leaders create in their immediate teams. And that is largely how people experience culture. So it's all very well to have, it's really important to have clarity around what your values are and what behaviors are linked to that, right? So most organizations will have that now. If they don't, I really encourage them to go about that process of creating cultural clarity. And yes, it will be on the website. Yes, it will be spoken about internally. I call them banner values, because sometimes there is a disconnect between what we say is the culture and what people actually experience, and the extent to which people within an organization will say what is the culture. If we were to ask somebody in an organization, what would you say is your culture? They might have those answers of those tangible values. If we said to them, how would you describe your culture? They might say something quite different or a bit different, right? So actually, part of the work with culture is aligning the experiences people have, the kind of lived reality, with what we say the culture is. And there's always a disconnect, right? Because actually the culture that we clarify, identify, and espouse is aspirational. It's who we want to be. And no organization, just like there's no perfect leader or you know, contributor even in an organization. Culture is never outworked perfectly. That's the aspiration. That's what we're aiming for. But the reason that this matters so much is that leaders play such a key role in what the lived, real experience of culture is. And I find that in organizations, as you say, culture can be in the remit of HR, understandably, because they are informed and know how to go about this. And somebody in the organization has to own it specifically to make sure it happens. But what concerns me is when there is no real ownership of the cultural and behavioral change that needs to happen across the layers of leadership, because that's where the real transformation happens. So to me, it needs to be a partnership.
Even if we would just stop the conversation here, I think this is just enough for all of our listeners to really take home, because in my perspective, culture has so much to do with the signals that are kind of transmitted in an organization of what is encouraged here, what is rewarded here, what is not accepted here. And as you say, so much of those signals come through leadership and leadership at all levels. And I think for our listeners, for people who are in those positions, if we say HR leaders, ethics and compliance leaders, to see, okay, somebody's or their fellow executives or CEO, for example, is wanting to kind of hand over responsibility to drive a culture change to them, and where they feel that there's not that sense of ownership, that's not that sense of needed ownership that we understand. Because what I see in many organizations is that you kind of try to, you see, okay, here's a problem, and then you kind of, you don't delegate really, you relegate the issue to HR, and then you want them to kind of go straight to the team members and kind of jumping past managers and going straight to the team members. And then you're inviting an inspiring speaker to talk about how to be nice to each other at work or something like that. But just to be a little bit cynical, but for people who are in those positions and who feel like they're struggling to kind of get their fellow executives to take ownership, what is something that you would encourage them to do or say to help their, for example, a CEO or their executive team to see and take their ownership and see that HR or ethics and compliance cannot drive this by themselves?
It's a great question, Tobias. And I'd actually also include EDI in this as well. Equity, diversity, inclusion. I think it's another area where it can sit with HR, but actually it's part of culture and needs to be owned by all leaders. So in terms of what can the people in these functions who do have the responsibility for it do to engage wider leaders, I guess there's three things that I'd say. The first is, I mean, there's lots of things. I will say three things for the sake of time. The first is participation. So not just making it a push exercise, but really engaging people early on. I think that I'm a big believer that participation gains buy-in if it's genuine, right? So asking people for what do they see as the need for change? What would they like to be different? You know, we have to have alignment in business between culture and strategy. And the leaders who we're wanting to engage are charged with designing, creating, executing and delivering on strategic objectives. So culture isn't just a nice to have. It has to be a part of the core business of helping the business or the organization achieve what it's trying to do. And so bringing that conversation together, like given our goals for where we're going for the next 5 years and what we're trying to do and what our challenges are, what do you see we need in terms of culture shifts, or what do we need to keep in our culture? So engaging them really early on in the process and making them partners in that discovery journey, I'd say is really important. Rather than coming later saying, here's what we're seeing, we think that we need to change these things, you have to do this, right? Typically what I see when that happens is not that leaders have any issue or problem with what is the initiatives that they're trying to drive, but they just don't have the same engagement. They don't have a sense of ownership and engagement with it. And let's face it, they're busy with competing priorities. So they have other things that they have to deliver and prioritize, and they feel like this is someone else's job. It's on their performance sheet, not mine, you know. So I'll help if I can, but it's not the level of engagement that we need. So participation early on in the discovery process around what you're trying to change before you take decisions around how to go about driving that change. The next thing that I'd say is data. So having the data on what you feel needs to change, or to be wary of that is changing, that you don't want to change maybe in terms of that alignment between espoused values and lived values. So the getting the data, you know, things, we run things like culture audits annually and stuff to find out, like there's all kinds of ways you can gather that data. Having the data, sharing the data, and making sure that not just like someone can find it on the intranet or that it's sent to everybody, all the leaders or whatever, but really it's a meaningful part of leadership meetings and, you know, leadership conferences, whatever you might have, that data is shared and open and available. And the other thing, and this is where I'm seeing a shift with people that I think is really positive, is that leaders are now being held accountable for culture. So to the degree that it might be on their scorecard, that, you know, certainly with kind of DEI initiatives and targets, and I think other parts of culture as well, ethics, things like that, so that leaders across the organization are not just being evaluated, rewarded, remunerated, promoted based on financials and meeting performance targets, but actually, in order to be successful, they have to create an environment that where their people and potentially even external stakeholders experience the culture in a way that is aligned with what the espoused culture is. And so I'd say engagement, participation, having, sharing, and holding people accountable with the data. And then the last one that I think is skills. So I think that for people, you know, I spend a huge amount of my professional life with wonderful HR people who are so informed and engaged, and it's easy for those of us who live and breathe this space to think that it's so obvious, some of these things, you know. So I think that one of the things we have to do, and this is what I really advocate for, is for leaders to use HR as partners to help them work out how to make the changes that they want. And sometimes that actually, so the work that I do, it really connects culture and leadership development, because actually leaders often need skills in order to really drive and create and foster the culture that they want. So let's take this to a really practical example. Let's say that one of the values or behaviors that you want is a kind of openness, you know, that you're trying to create that psychological safety, a culture of feedback. People can come and talk about how they're feeling and give feedback and all of that. Sure. People who work in leadership development, culture, HR, we have a really clear sense of that, right? Some organizations really equip their leaders with skills, and other leaders haven't had the opportunities to do these kind of core skills. I call them not soft skills, core skills development that they may need, where actually they may just need to be equipped, whether that's one-to-one or in a group scenario, with skills development around here's how to have difficult conversations. Here's how to create a culture of feedback. Here's how to ask great questions. Here's how to create psychological safety. And I think that in the kind of space of HR and these fields that we operate in, we can't take for granted that people, they might want to make these changes, but actually aren't really sure of how, what behavioral tweaks they should make in order to create the culture that they agree that they want.
That aligns so well with my understanding of this. And we talk a lot about how kind of what was really this eye-opening insight for me was that culture, just like our physical health, is not built by short-term initiatives, but it's built by our habits. And leadership habits are really critical there. And of course, we talk about skills. We talk a lot about kind of habits and practices that are like vital to building and sustaining cultural health. And where, in my perspective, it's not necessarily complex, but it's hard because it's kind of challenges our comfort. We have to do the things, for example, let's say, and I think so many times organizations, very easily just assume that, for example, that people know how to give, to have difficult conversations, or even something maybe, because that's something still that a lot of people might talk about, oh, we need to learn that. But even something like giving positive feedback, that a lot of people don't have that necessarily as a very strong skill or habit. And it's not something they do. And when you ask people within the organization, people don't know what is encouraged or rewarded because they don't actually get that feedback from their leaders. So that's so incredibly, incredibly important and insightful. And I wanted to shift a little bit, but if you have any comments on that, just please jump in.
Only to say how much I agree with you. And I think your physical health analogy is really good as well. Like you know, you said it's not just, it's not that everything is complex, but it is hard, like, you know, giving up sugar or having less caffeine or drinking more water, some of the things that actually just make a big difference to me personally can be hard, but are not complex. Some of it is complex, but you're right, there are really things that we can do in creating good habits around culture, the same way that we create good leadership habits. Yeah, wonderful.
Another article that you wrote that I also found really fascinating is that you talk about preserving the best aspects of a company's culture while implementing change. And I find this approach really compelling because it aligns very much and with conversations we've had, for example, with Edgar Schein on this podcast and in our work as well. And I'm thinking also Kevin Oakes talking about the idea of culture renovation and the idea that I think it was Edgar Schein who said to me that like asking an organization to change its entire culture is like asking a person to change their whole personality. We can't really do that, but we can change some behaviors. And I wanted to ask you, what is perhaps an example that you've seen in your work that where you see in that ability to preserve something that was the best aspect and while also then driving some form of change?
So to preserve something while they're going through change.
Yeah. Yes. To be able to, I think, make that distinction. And we could start there otherwise instead, because you talk about this like discerning between those two things, what we want to keep, what we want to change, and also being able to differentiate between what is valuable and what is simply nostalgia, which is of course really, really hard. What's your experience there, and what have you seen?
Yeah, so the things that I find, the kind of nostalgic point that I see mostly is the family feel. So as the changes, often it's interesting. When we talk about organizational change, we think of restructure, massive transformation, all of that. The reality is a lot of organizations are going through changes as a result of maybe stagnating. And then a huge number of organizations are going through changes as a result of growth. So it's, you know, if you have sustained growth over a period of time, actually, you know, like culture change doesn't just need to happen for organizations that are struggling. It needs to happen as much to help companies that are growing to continue to be sustainable, because what they're creating, the same way that, you know, in leadership theory and research, we often talk about that, you know, sometimes at different phases of a business, actually different leaders are a better fit. The same is true for kind of culture, but I completely respect Edgar Schein's work and love the point around it would be like changing an entire personality, which is not possible, right? It's relatively stable over time, the same as culture. So the things that I see, so the nostalgic point, when people are holding on to part of their culture that maybe they should be changing, typically I find that around family feel. So they might not call it family feel. I don't particularly love that term myself, but that sense of closeness and proximity to everyone. Now, the reality is when you grow, you can't know everyone and have that really sense of we're such close personal colleagues, even friends, and I have direct access to all the leaders and there's an open door for everyone. You know, they become busier. It might feel like doors are closed now more than before, or I'm meant to go to this person. I don't get to see those people anymore, that kind of stuff. And I think that's really valid, right? Culture is such a huge part of our lives. And often we stay in organizations. We don't just stay for monetary reasons and for growth opportunities. We also stay because we like being part of the organizations that we're in and for the most part really respect and are thankful for the culture. Most clients that I speak with are really proud of their culture. So it's understandable, and at the same time, it's not always realistic to hold on to that. So I think that leaders need to be very mindful of what we are, of calling it out, for starters, of having conversations around this, of finding out, again, back to the data point, of specifically what will be missed or is being missed and what is the tension that is felt, not making assumptions around that. And then thinking about what culture can we shift to that meets our strategic objectives and just the place that we're in as an organization while still delivering on some of the things that people find to be really important. So that's not an easy process, but it is really worthwhile, because otherwise you see in high growth organizations, you see people leave for the pure reason that it doesn't feel the same as it used to, and it just hasn't been addressed openly and directly and really thought through. So that's one thing that I'd say. The one that people want to hold, the one that I see that people, the value that people want to hold on to the most, that they should hold on to and is hard to, is collaboration. So collaboration, sorry, I'm talking about in the case, for example, of a high growth firm. So in an organization where they do collaborate well, as an organization maybe becomes more corporate, has more structures in place, has more, you know, creates more divisions, or let's say you go through multiple acquisitions. Maybe you have, you know, been acquired, you've got a buy and build strategy. Collaboration is something that, and I'd refer you here to Heidi Gardner's work and her recent book, Smarter Collaboration, that collaboration is something that is really beneficial and so important, regardless of size and regardless of industry. And I find that organizations, particularly larger ones, are really seeking how can we drive collaboration? And what I tell my clients is, if you've got collaboration now, hold on to it for dear life and be really intentional with how you keep that through the changes. Because once it deteriorates, which can happen without even noticing sometimes along the way until you know, kind of wider, bigger moments down the track, it's much harder to build that back in. So that's the one that I see people need to really be intentional about holding on to.
All this, I recognize it so incredibly much, and I couldn't agree more with what you've been just saying. And I think this aspect of the family feel is really, really interesting, because I've heard the same thing so many times exactly with those type of words. And of course, and it really relates to what you were putting words on there. And so what you're saying is that for leaders to be really, really intentional about actually addressing what is changing, what are we holding on to, and also because I'm thinking that there is a sense of loss. And I think that as a leadership team, we might not feel that in the same way, because we just see the potential upside. I mean, we're growing, we're like, all of that, it's amazing. But I think for people out in the organization, what they feel is a sense of loss. They feel, even though they might be really excited about the growth, they also feel the sense of, but I used to know everyone, or I used to know everything was going on, and now I feel so siloed and so on. Is there something else you want to say to that point, just in ways that organizations and leaders can address that to kind of respect that sense of loss, but at the same time help people move forward, because you can't have it back. I mean, you have to move forward, but at the same time do that in a way that respects what people are going through.
So that is a great question. I think we need to be mindful that leaders can experience this loss as well. We talk about, you know, resistance to change. I've done a lot of work in this space and resistance to change. And part of it is the kind of psychological, social identity loss that we experience. And that's relevant for everyone in the organization. And so I do think that as a kind of business community, we are becoming better and more mindful of the importance of how people feel at work. I write about and advise around joy at work and well-being at work. That's such a big part of our role, not just as HR or L&D professionals, but as for, you know, the responsibility now for all leaders is to create environments of psychological safety and employee well-being. And that's valid from a business perspective as well. It's not just the right thing to do. Also, it actually leads to better business performance and business outcomes when people are happy and, you know, feeling better about work. So there's a real business case for thinking about what loss people might be experiencing, what they are looking for, which ultimately I think is meaningful social connection and a sense of being valued. So it's not always necessarily about status. It's more about the fact that I feel valued by the organization and the people in it. So I think that if we're in particular looking at meaningful social connection and how we replace those things, or how we make sure that those things are fostered, through, you know, the initiatives that we drive and the changes that we make and the leadership habits that we encourage, as well as thinking about how people are feeling valued. You made this really interesting point earlier around, like, what is celebrated, for example, and where we have change going on. Typically, I find that leaders feel like it's a whole job on top of their job, right? So what that can ultimately lead to is a huge pressure, internally motivated and externally kind of tracked for performance, delivering results, execution. So what happens in those kind of scenarios? We tend to pause less. We celebrate success less, even if that just means, hey, this is a massive accomplishment. Thank you for the work that you've done. You know, there's small things, that ways that we used to behave. So sometimes, you know, where we feel that loss of value or meaningful connection, actually it can just be a result of the high pressure and performance and results driven approach that is happening when leaders have taken on responsibility for driving change on top of the roles that they already had. So I think it's often unintentional, but you know, anyone who's engaging and listening to you, Tobias, I'm sure is really thoughtful about this. So I think it's something that we need to shine light on in the organization. Just make sure that continues to happen through the periods of change.
Really, really great points. And I often think, for example, when you're working through change, to ask yourself, is what we're doing now, what we're communicating now, is it building trust, or is it destroying trust or breaking down trust? And I think another connected to what you were saying, so are we really thoughtful about whether people can still find that, feel that sense of belonging and feel that sense of being valued, and really thinking through the processes and understand that what might just look like an organizational scheme to us, that's actually people's lived experiences, and it's their social context. And I think really when we reflect on culture and what culture is, what it comes from, and I think this picture that culture is kind of created to deal with uncertainty, and that we don't necessarily dislike change, but we dislike uncertainty. We dislike not knowing what will make me feel successful or make me feel emotionally well within this uncertain context. So great, great points. So I really wanted to talk as well, because you've written a book about gravitas, and now we had some technical issues in this interview. So I don't know if perhaps we're going to have to save that for another time, or if you feel that you can say something about why it's important, and if there's just something that you want to kind of give to our listeners, because I think it connects back to also what we were talking about in the beginning, also being able to kind of communicate with the fellow executive teams and get them to take their responsibility. I think there's a connection here. Is there something that you still feel you have time to say on that, even though we could, of course, have spent a lot of time really digging together in that question?
Oh, that's kind of you to create space for this, Tobias. And also, I agree, actually, it's part of the same conversation, because when we're talking about how can we really foster meaningful culture change, what that comes down to often is our own ability to influence, and that the influence there is what I talk about with gravitas, which is influence beyond hierarchical lines. So we're influencing to drive the culture change we want, we're typically influencing across the organization, you know, with peers. That it's very different to when we're just influencing people who directly report to us. And so when I talk about gravitas, I refer to people who, their words carry weight, their ideas are taken seriously, you know, they're respected, they're trusted, they're valued. My book is Authentic Gravitas, and that's because I've been an executive coach for many years, like almost 20 years now. And so many times people have said to me, you know, I call it the quiet of the coaching room, when people open up and feel that they can be, you know, it's a safe space to be honest about what's going on. They say, I need more gravitas. But then the second thing that almost they'll consistently say is, and I don't want to pretend to be someone else. So what happened as a result of all of that was that I went on a research journey to work out how can we develop gravitas and how. And my work experience made me instinctively believe that we can develop gravitas, because I've seen clients develop so much over years of working with them.
quickly as well, but you know, over the years I've seen different people. And so I guess there's a few things to say. One is that gravitas is a skill and a quality that we can develop. It is not something that we have or we don't have, and it's not something that we are born with or not born with. So I don't see it as being connected to personality. I mentioned before that personality is relatively stable over time. It shifts, but it's relatively stable. And when I did the research, I found that people would refer to others who had a high degree of gravitas. When they were describing people, they were describing people with all different personality types. So we can't hold on to that sense of I'm just not like that when it comes to having this influence across the business that is beyond hierarchy. And it also is not about confidence. So one of the big misconceptions that I found is that we look at other people who we think they have a lot of gravitas and we associate them as being really confident. What I did was go and ask those people who others described as having gravitas or having a high degree of gravitas, because it's not binary, right? It's not have or don't have, but who others described as having a high degree of gravitas. I asked them about their experiences and how they felt about themselves, and they didn't say, yeah, I've got it all together, I'm awesome, I'm winning at life. They said, sometimes I have to give myself a pep talk in the morning. I have to give myself a team brief, or, you know, I'm really nervous going into this scenario. It really matters to me, and I have to, but I want to do it. It matters. So actually what we're perceiving as confidence is the outworking of courage. And then, of course, as you choose courage, the thing is that confidence or what's kind of self-efficacy, our belief in our ability to do difficult things, that's very difficult to change, but we can choose to be courageous. And there are things that we can put into place to help us be courageous. For example, like, you know, sponsorship and mentorship and allyship and reaching out, creating good networks and all kinds of things. So as we choose to be courageous, then what happens is that we're not perfect at the outworking of these things, but if we take a learning approach and we keep growing, we end up becoming more comfortable in those scenarios, and then other people interpret that as confidence. And to some degree, confidence actually grows from that. So that's one of the big myths that I think is important when we're talking about gravitas. And just to say that, you know, you can have gravitas and still be you. I think that's what's most important. And gravitas is important because where our goal is to drive positive, meaningful change in an organization, our ability to be trusted and respected and taken seriously and have our ideas really considered across the business, regardless of hierarchy, is in everyone's best interest and the organizational best interest as well. So gravitas is absolutely something that we shouldn't just want to have. It helps the business if we can develop our skills in this area.
Beautiful. Rebecca, thank you so much for having this conversation. And this has been a really, really helpful conversation. And I'm so, so grateful for the work that you and your company, I think it's Coach Advisor, does. And also really recommend people to pick up your book, Authentic Gravitas. And for our listeners, what are ways that they can connect with you and learn more about your work?
Oh, that's such a nice question, Tobias. Thank you. I'm quite good on LinkedIn, so you can connect with me on LinkedIn. I think there's only one Rebecca Newton at LSE, at the London School of Economics, so you can find me easily there. And I write regularly at Harvard Business Review, so and Forbes as well, so you can follow my work there. But yeah, please connect with me on LinkedIn. That would be great. And Tobias, I look forward to seeing more of your work as well. It's so wonderful to spend time with someone who has such shared passion for this space, and you have such great insights. I really appreciated the conversation today. Thank you.
Me too. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, it really means the world to us if you would share, rate, and review it on iTunes. We're super grateful for all the 5-star reviews and generous comments that we've received so far. It really helps us take the message of purpose and integrity to a wider audience. And finally, don't forget to grab your free PDF on leadingtransformationalchange.com. See you in 2 weeks.